Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.
Welcome to our second hour here on Circles of Change, and always a pleasure to have another in-studio guest. So, Dr. Gary Auerbach, welcome to the studio.
Thank you, Zara. Nice to be here.
You bet. And I'm calling this segment The Zigs and Zags and Overlaying Circles of Personal Change. And our listeners are going to understand that once they hear this brief introduction, then Gary and I will be off speaking. He graduated from the University of Arizona in 1970 and went to work as an accountant in San Francisco, became a CPA certified, and not too long after that decided to change careers and attend chiropractic school in Iowa. Having an affinity to the corporate and business world, though, Gary not only went into private practice back in Tucson, he also became involved in the state's early chiropractic association, and then what became a lifelong commitment to advancing his field of medicine on an international level. This included a project with the World Health Organization in the late 80s, and then linking 80 national chiropractic associations around the globe. But then something else changed. Due to the wrist injury in 1991, Gary had to leave the chiropractic practice. And not to be deterred, though, from expanding his horizons, he taught himself how to make a platinum photograph, the longest-lasting form of photographic printing, by the way, that leveraged his X-ray know-how for medicine with large-format film in a field camera. Gary's also then started a consulting job with one of the largest chiropractic schools, still staying connected. His work in portraiture has led to a 15-year project photographing American Indians that, wouldn't you know, now is included in the permanent collection of the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C., as well as led him to contributing to museum collections around the world and publishing a book. And if that isn't enough to share about this unique individual, he and his brothers and parents started a pistachio farm, planting 4,000 seedlings from over that thus in 9 years resulted in 36,000 trees and a farm that then 25 years later was sold. And you should know that Gary is continuing graduate work to this day in public health at the University of Arizona, and with another shift in the wind as he's going to return to private practice later this year with chiropractic, while continuing his art, and that practice is going to be called, are we not surprised, Arts and Sciences. So you've got a busy life, don't you, my friend?
It's been a busy life.
It is.
You know, when you have 6 decades behind you, you have a lot of time to get into a lot of different things, and I've tried to take advantage of those times.
That's great. So from agriculture to studying medicine, by the way, accountancy in the middle of that, and us engineers would say, woo, that in and of itself was a challenge, I'm sure. But then to know that this wrist injury, take us back to that time you hurt your wrist.
Well, basically, I took a fall and broke my wrist, and as a chiropractor, that made it impossible to practice from one day to the next. And so I had an opportunity to try to figure where I wanted to go direction-wise. I had always had an interest in photography, but had disappointing results with my earlier work, which had shown signs of deterioration. So I searched out ways that one could make a permanent photograph.
Oh, okay. So you had always been a photographer.
Yes, I had always been interested in 35mm amateur style.
Sure.
And found that by using platinum metal salts that you could actually get an image that would be extremely archival because the platinum metals don't deteriorate, they don't oxidize, and they'll last as long as the substrate that they're printed on will last, which can be 300, 400, 500 years
or
more.
Oh my gosh, Joe, this is not just keeping them for the couple years or from one generation to the next, 300, 400 years. I want our listeners to hear back again, Gary, you said you hurt your wrist and then I had this opportunity to shift. Now, many people would say, I hit a crisis, and they go through a frozen period and so on and so forth. But you saw the world opening new doors for you.
It worked out that way. I mean, immediately when it happens is that panic of what do I do now? And giving it thought and consideration, I always had this passion for photography and wanted to find a way to elevate the level of the work that I was doing. Mm-hmm. And working with platinum required having a negative that was large, and you made reference to the fact that I used X-ray film in my practice of 8, 10, 11, 14 size negative, which I then incorporated in a field camera and used that. So when you see that person out in the field with a camera with the black hood over his head,
yep,
that's kind of what I look like when I'm out photographing.
But you know, and again, just to give people appreciation, you revealed six decades of endeavors. That interesting how the skills and abilities that we acquire along the way, that we can flip them or maybe turn them slightly 90 degrees and apply it in new ways. So that this aha moment of using your X-ray know-how to match with your photographic know-how.
Right. That was very serendipitous, and the experience working in photography has been very gratifying. Because the work that I do has an archival quality of hundreds or more years, the first project that I endeavored on was to photograph Native American peoples, because in trying to think what kind of imagery would be of interest 300 or 400 years from now, mm-hmm, I felt that that was a good way to start. And it things start slowly, and nothing happens overnight. I began looking for subject matter that I could photograph, and it wasn't readily every day that I would find another subject that I could photograph, and it built slowly. In the beginning, 3, 4, 5 images in a year. In the beginning, that seems anecdotal. It seems small, but after 5 years goes by and you have 25 or 30 images, and 10 years goes by and you have 50, 60, 70 images, it becomes a body of work.
Which, of course, illustrates the fact, of course, in your field that there was a time when people didn't even view photography as art, right?
Well, that's...
But in this day and age, of course, in the last, 5 to 10 years in particular, that photography has its own place, and particularly the type of images that you've created.
Well, I think that I'm following along a cadre of people, Edward Curtis, Alfred Stieglitz, like, and art. Photography as art really came into its own towards the turn of the century, actually 1900s. Right. Alfred Stieglitz started Camera Notes, and people began accepting the photographic image as a work of art in itself. And actually, when I look at the work of people from the 1890s to the 1930s, I'm amazed at how fabulous the work actually is.
Now, if someone would be, by the way, for those of you who are web streaming, if you got access to your computer, flip up another screen, you want to go to GaryAuerbach.com, that's AuerBach, to see the impressions of these images. The first look at platinum portraiture would make me say, oh, these are just really old pictures, because of the tones, the seasoning, the yellowing, or the rosy coloring. But no, actually, they're new pictures that look old, but 100 years from now, they're going to look the same.
That's right. And that's, you've probably seen photographs taken and printed around the 1915, 1920, how old they look, but they probably look the same when they made them as they do now. They use platinum printmaking from all the way from the 1880s to the 1920s, 1930s. It was very popular, and then during the wars, it went out of availability. The platinum
became used for other reasons,
so they stopped using it. It wasn't until the 70s and 80s that there was a resurgence in the platinum process. And although there isn't a paper pre-made that you can use and print, like with silver-based printmaking, and now with digital, it's gone even in another world. The platinum has a special look, and it does look old, and it will always look old.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I mentioned in the introduction, of course, that when you were a chiropractor, and even you were joining chiropractic when even as a field it was coming into its own, right? And being involved with your profession of getting involved in technical societies and connecting people globally, you know, who would have known that perhaps you were also setting in place a network or the railway that you were going to be able to run to expand the touch and the connections for your artwork?
It's funny, I was doing a lot of work in Geneva, Switzerland, and I had a number of exhibitions in that area. And from those connections, when I returned recently with my newer work, I went to some of those places where I'd had exhibitions, and they referred me to some museums that were in the area collecting engravings and gravures, and I had opportunity to get my work into these facilities, and I've had a wonderful outcome from that.
Yes, and in fact, share with some of our listeners those in international venues that your work is displayed at. I mean, obviously, the Smithsonian Institution, our domestic listeners, well, we know where that is. But some of the other museums are really an impressive list.
It's nice. My first museum that I got into was the Library of Congress. A fortuitous meeting here in Tucson, in fact, with a curator from the Library of Congress who was looking for work, and I went to the venue where she was reviewing portfolios, and she liked my work immediately and said, I'm going to help bring you in. And that's really what happens with a lot of these museums, is that you need an advocate who's going to help you to entree into their institution, because it's large, and if you're just trying to walk in the front door and find out where you want to go, it's almost an impossibility. So having an advocate is of great importance. I got one into the Library of Congress, Mercia Battle. She still continues to bring my work in there. And likewise with the Smithsonian, I had met the archivist at a stereoscopic society meeting, and she saw my Indian work, and she saw a stereoscopic Indian print that I made, and she said, well, we're not accepting new work now, but in 2 or 3 years, I'm going to reopen curation and I'm going to bring you in. And 2.5 later, she got back in touch with me and said, it's time. You're going to be the last person I bring in before
That's
I retire.
Right, that is exactly right. The clock was ticking. You had told me she was about to retire.
Right. And that worked out great. And they have 44 prints, and they asked me to go back to everybody and get words, and I came up with 5 questions, and that finished the collection, because it put words and photographs together, which added to the ambiance of looking at an image of a native person and then hearing his words and the syntax of his own language. And that website is the wewalkinbeauty.com, which is also online, because there's few books left, and it's really a nice read, and I'm very proud of that project.
Well, in fact, that project, as you said, was started with the idea of an exposition that's married with the stories, and oh, we have a book.
Right.
And so those books now have been distributed, like you say, you've sold them over the years, just have a few remaining. So the whole process of realizing you now were birthing a book, that you are now bringing into the world yet another child, because I know you and your wife have 2 children. Right?
I should mention my wife, Christine Tamulaitis Auerbach, love of my life,
there
and
you go.
3 kids.
3
we've
kids.
Got.
That's right. 3 kids.
David, Lauren, and Michael. They're all traveling the world right now, in Cambodia and Thailand, and my son is down in Costa Rica and Panama. So the kids are taking over the travels that the old man was doing a lot of years before.
You're not done. You're not done by any stretch of the imagination, but certainly that possibility, you planted those seeds that
it's
you and Christine
great.
Together
I'm
for your
I'm really
children.
Glad they're enjoying the world getting out there right now.
Yeah, that's right. But the idea that you birthed, then, okay, I'll say a 4th child, which was your book. And what kind of doors or connections happened as a result of you now having a book? Because for many artists, photographers, painters, sculptors, and so on, particularly this day and age with the internet wanting to compete with so many other things, that truly your book in some way becomes a new business card or a new entree.
The book is a compilation of a body of work. It took all the pieces of art that went into the Smithsonian with the words, and I was able to compile the entire project in one space, and it's extremely satisfying and gratifying to me. My concern is the edition is running out, and I'm looking to hopefully reprint it someday, because I think it's a part of American history, and the Smithsonian has said so in so many words, and I'm proud of the the foreword to the book, which is written by the curator of manuscripts and photographs of Native American works at the Library of Congress, and it's a very scholarly piece.
Yeah.
I didn't write an artist statement. I figured it was best to leave my photographs to speak for myself. The words of the individuals speak for themselves.
Yeah.
And then I've got a statement from the Library of Congress and a letter from the Smithsonian in the book. And that's all you need
to do, isn't it, too? So Platinum Portraiture, that's been connection directly with the name of Gary Auerbach. And, of course, we've got the doctor before that because of being a chiropractor. And as I said in the introduction, lo and behold, you're going back into practice this
right.
year. And so your wrist is all healed or are the techniques
changed? It's not totally healed, but it's a lot better than it was. And I've worked with new techniques that have come along to help me modify my approach to taking care of people, and I'm looking forward to retiring and going back in practice.
Don't you love that? The word retiring usually for people means really kind of wrapping things up, and I'm seeing this smile on this man here in the studio that's as if he's going to chiropractic for the very first time.
I know. It's like I have to figure out what to do between 65 and 85.
I'm sure you'll come up with something.
I've got it, I think, figured out. So I just have to keep myself healthy. And your speaker before here was talking about listening to the body and understanding how to take care of yourself. And these are very important things. And I may be at a slightly... a smaller capacity than what I did when I was in prime time and with a large practice and lots of employees, and times are changing. And now I want to carry my chiropractic and my art forward. I've got 20 years in each. Both are well developed, and I have a reputation in both, and want to manifest both continued on into the future.
So when you launched into your Platinum Portraiture, you married, or it came suddenly to mind that you could take your x-ray expertise and marry it and be self-taught, because you are self-taught in Platinum Portraiture, to build the Platinum business, the photographic business. Now you're going from that over to chiropractic. It'll be interesting to see, or do you know yet, what perhaps you've learned in these 20 years of your photographic phase of your career is going to feed back in now and take your chiropractic in new ways.
Well, you know, it's funny. Working with Native American people, there's a great sensitivity that you have to have. And as a chiropractor, I learned how to have a person relax well. And when I worked with the Native peoples, you have to be very respectful, and you have to get them at ease, and so that you can make the type of image that really captures who they are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there really is something to capturing a soul when you take an Indian person's photograph, and there's been much discussion about them feeling that you're stealing their soul.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the questions that I asked the people was, what was your impression of being photographed? And not one actually talked about the fact that they felt that the photographer was stealing something from them. I think the sensitivities Native American peoples have about being photographed is when people photograph them without asking their permission or having the respect to ask their permission first. That's what they don't care for. But if you're friendly, respectful, and present the fact that you're trying to do a body of work, which I did and always had samples of my work, they were very obliging and cooperative, enjoyed the process. And reading the book and reading the words actually is, to me, more interesting than looking at the photographs. The photographs are nice. The words are great. They spoke to me from the heart, and it comes through in the words of the book.
So I can picture now you opening your doors of arts and science, your upcoming reentry into the chiropractic world, that not that you weren't mindful of the soulful part of your clients when you first were in practice, which is interesting juxtaposed against the fact you started as an accountant dealing the world of numbers, right? That my guess is as you now come back to chiropractic, that even perhaps how you're going to stage up those first conversations before someone is on the table, so to speak, you're going to bring a different dialogue or a different connection, do you think?
I don't know. I'm a product of all the years of my life, and I've done a lot of things, had opportunity to travel the world, to meet different cultures, to work with people physically and mentally and spiritually with chiropractic and photographically and artistically with them with photography. And when I look at a person, I can appraise them structurally as they're standing there, and I can also look and see them at what side might be the best angle to make a portrait of that person.
That's right.
So I have a wider understanding of dealing with a person because of these different elements. And the accounting is so basic, and I told all my kids, study accounting, even if you don't go into it, because it's fundamental to anything that you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a basic knowledge, and I certainly would recommend everybody study some accounting, because it's going to be helpful, and it's amazing.
I just sensed my body tightening up. I'm an engineer, so, and yes, I did my bit in the accounting hopper. You know, I also mentioned the introduction, of course, another part of the Renaissance man that we have here, of course, is you and your family members, your brothers, getting into the whole pistachio business.
Oh, it's great.
I mean, what, and to do it for 25 years and the connectedness with your community in that regard.
To put your hands in the ground and actually plant all the seedlings like we did in the beginning was quite a process. And to watch them grow up, it took 7 years before they would actually produce fruit, which is the nut. And so there was a long wait period, but it's such a good food to eat that was an added plus of being in the farming business, which is not an easy industry to be in. I mean, you have to deal with Mother Nature, and Mother Nature can be very difficult, and at times was very difficult. But I know when I traveled to Geneva to the World Health Organization and would go to meetings, and I would carry little half-pound bags of pistachios in different flavors, they knew who Gary Auerbach was, and they would search him out and wonder what kind of flavors was he bringing this year. And it was an added way to have name recognition with people that you might see later on, who oftentimes at WHO started out as lower policy people, ended up becoming senior policy people and important.
Exactly. And isn't that fun? And plus just the fun that you had of sharing those additional parts of your life with other people in true relationship, Gary. I mean, that's the thing, of course, here on this show, we get exposed to a lot of conversations about changing business, changing technology, social media being the rage, internet, et cetera, et cetera. But you know, to have put a hand in a bag of pistachio nuts with, like you say, a lower level administrator at the World Health Organization years ago, he's not going to ever forget you.
Right.
And build those connections.
Great. And, you know, through that, I did with the pistachios, and then I got some reputation photographing some of the senior policy people, including the director general of WHO on the final night of a making of a major treaty, which was a very nice opportunity and something I'll remember my whole life.
Your whole life, exactly. Well, again, for our listeners, we've been speaking with Dr. Gary Auerbach. Do visit his site at www.GaryAuerbach.com. Gary, again, the site specific to your book
is www.WeWalkInBeauty.com. One word.
One word.
WeWalkInBeauty.
Wonderful. Well, thanks again for contributing to our show. And also, when you type Gary Auerbach into Google, you're also going to see he's featured on Wikipedia. So congratulations with that opportunity as well. And we'll look forward to watching your career as it zigzags and circles around here.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure
to
have you.
Being on your show.
Real pleasure.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.